WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Governor Youngkin declares a state of emergency for Virginia as Tropical Storm Debbie approaches. And why were Stonewall Jackson High and Ashby Lee Elementary originally named after Confederate generals? Our series on Shenandoah County school names continues. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, August 7th. Governor Glenn Youngkin declared a state of emergency for Virginia Tuesday based on forecasts for Tropical Storm Debbie. The forecast calls for significant rainfall and flooding across the entire Commonwealth that could block roads and cause power outages. The declaration accelerates the Commonwealth's response to potential storm damage. The track of the tropical storm is still somewhat uncertain, but Virginians should be prepared for the possibility of flooding and high winds. Rainfall may be particularly heavy Thursday, with anywhere from 2 to 4 inches of rain possible, heaviest east of the Blue Ridge. There's an estimated 18,000 blind and visually impaired individuals in Virginia, and their use of the internet can be a struggle. During this year's session, the General Assembly was unable to agree on legislation to require state and local government websites to become more accessible. One state agency is still working to address the problem. Virginia Public Radio's Brad Kuttner reports.
Tropical storm Debbie looms over Southie.
That's the sound of Bonnie O'Day's vision impairment assistive technology reading content from a website. She's showing me the tech after a recent meeting of the Public Body Procurement Workgroup, a committee that studies vendor contracts with Virginia and its localities. At a meeting Tuesday morning, they brought up a bill from Delegate Kathy Tran, which would have set new website accessibility standards across the state. But it was kicked to a study. The good news, 88% of state agency websites met accessibility standards. The bad news, the thousands of local agencies and school systems that are yet to comply.
So we have a large price tag on this.
That's Chris Carey with Meta Services, a consulting group that works with agencies to address their IT needs. He said the cost of getting so many localities in compliance could be as much as $500 million. Corey Singleton is with Virginia Higher Ed Accessibility Partners. He spoke in favor of new compliance rules. While he understood concerns about costs, he said uneven enactment was an ongoing issue.
It's not happening right now. Broadly, institutions are electing to do it, and very few are electing to do it.
Bonnie O'Day, meanwhile, said compliance is a necessity beyond any cost.
Being accessible to people with disabilities is a part of doing business.
The procurement work group will make recommendations ahead of the 2025 legislative session. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Virginia has many different regional accents, which can sometimes create a problem with new technology. And artificial intelligence has a hard time understanding some Virginia pronunciations. Also with Virginia Public Radio, Michael Pope has that story.
From the hills of Appalachia to the melodic tones of the Piedmont, Virginia has some of the most perplexing accents in the country. A survey conducted by the language learning platform Guide to Fluency shows Appalachia and Piedmont accents have artificial intelligence stumped. Alan Shark is executive director of the Public Technology Institute.
There's a real sense of equity and fairness in all of this. If we are turning more and more to these systems to help us in times of emergency, getting information from, say, government websites or commercial websites, then folks who are not able to communicate with these systems are at a real disadvantage.
J.P. Singh is professor of global commerce and policy at the Schar School of Policy and Government at George Mason University.
There are not large enough data sets to make sense of all the ways in which people in the Piedmont or the Appalachian region use English. This relates to general problems in AI about inclusivity and bias and even facial recognition in the visual AI spaces.
The most misunderstood accent in the United States, according to the survey, is a Southern drawl. Michael Pope.
Why were Stonewall Jackson High and Ashby Lee Elementary originally named after Confederate generals? For insight into that decision, we have to trace the county, state, and the country's turbulent history back through time. From the Civil War through the Civil Rights Movement, WMRA's Randy B. Hagee has the second in our four-part series on school names in Shenandoah County.
For insight into that decision, we have to trace the county, state, and country's turbulent history back through time, from the Civil War through the Civil Rights Movement. As tensions escalated between the North and South after the election of Abraham Lincoln, Shenandoah County residents held a public meeting, demanding a convention with other slave states in an effort to gain concessions from the North, according to a Richmond newspaper from the time. South Carolina was the first state to secede from the U.S., declaring in December 1860 that an increasing hostility on the part of the non-slaveholding states to the institution of slavery had released South Carolina from its obligation to the federal government. Virginia and the other southern states followed. The majority of white men eligible to vote in Virginia, including in Shenandoah County, overwhelmingly approved secession in a statewide referendum. But 44 counties that did not want to go to war with the U.S. seceded again, thus forming the new state of West Virginia. That included Stonewall Jackson's hometown in Harrison County. 7 more counties were given the option to join. Some, like Hardy County, did, making Shenandoah the new border of the Commonwealth. I spoke with Mike Scheibe, with the coalition that advocated to reinstate the Confederate names, about who was living here at that time.
Shenandoah County has never been wealthy, and it wasn't during the Civil War either. I mean, there was farms, there was small, I mean, we're not looking at plantations and thousands of enslaved people here during the 1850s and 60s.
Yeah, I think from the records that I've seen, the biggest proportion of people who were ever enslaved in Shenandoah County was about 10% of the population. Or just above that, about 10.5%. It still matters very much to those people who were enslaved.
Oh, absolutely. That history, I think, you know, should be spotlighted somewhat and highlighted, and it seems like it is happening.
Census records show that in 1820, there were nearly 2,000 people enslaved in Shenandoah County, more than a tenth of the population. By 1860, the enslaved population had declined to 753 people, who were held in bondage by about 200 individual enslavers. The largest plantation owner was John G. Meem, a dry goods merchant from Lynchburg who enslaved 36 people here. In the following years, just over 1,200 white men from Shenandoah County would serve in the Confederate Army, whether by choice or conscription. Based on a review of service records, a quarter of them shared a surname with a local enslaver, or appeared to be that man themselves. 260 Shenandoans served directly under Jackson in the Stonewall Brigade, which fought many of the bloodiest battles of the war. Turner Ashby commanded his cavalry alongside them in the Shenandoah Valley Campaign of 1862.
The I-81 corridor, if they didn't fight on the land around it, they marched on it or camped on it at some point. So, you know, the amount of bloodshed here and the just crazy numbers of battles and small skirmishers and things that happen, I think, is a lot more reason why people relate more to the Civil War.
That local history includes Stonewall's 1862 encampment and the later military actions on Rood's Hill, a property sitting a stone's throw from the modern-day high school. There's also Union General Philip Sheridan's 1864 dispatch from Woodstock, in which he boasts about burning down farms throughout the valley. After the war, the Reconstruction era in Virginia saw the implementation of the Underwood Constitution, which was adopted by a historic state legislature that, for a brief time, included African-American delegates. That constitution established the state's public school system, which would remain segregated for nearly another century. By the 1920s, there were 2 public schools for black children in the county, each with 1 room and 1 teacher to serve students from 1st through 7th grade.
If you're an African-American, you want to go to high school, initially you have to go to Manassas.
Zachary Hoddle is an archivist at the Shenandoah County Library in Edinburgh.
Winchester and Harrisonburg build segregated high schools, but there's no transportation. So students are like taking the Greyhound bus to get there. Most of them, though, still are boarding, so that's like an added expense. And it's not until after World War II that there's an actual bus to take these students.
That's the Shenandoah County in which Laura Marquita and Willie Mitchell grew up.
We did go to an all-black, at that time, all-colored school here in Strasburg.
Mitchell chairs the Queen Street Sunset Hill Alumni Group. She and her husband have researched and curated historical exhibits about the schools for local museums.
It was a one-room school, blackboard in the front. There was a coal wood-burning stove. I really got involved with grammar in the English language, dangling participles, nouns, adverbs, adjectives. Loved it.
But change was on the horizon following the Supreme Court's Brown v. Board decision, although it would take years of social, political, and court battles before the Mitchells and their peers across Virginia would set foot in formerly all-white schools. For WMRE News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
Part three of this series will air tomorrow. You can find links to more information at WMRA.org and on the app. Charlottesville City Council unanimously voted this week to support Piedmont Housing Alliance and Habitat for Humanity by purchasing the Carlton Mobile Home Park. A private buyer previously offered $7 million for the property. City officials say the roughly six-acre mobile home park has space for 67 trailer pads. Eden Ratliff is Charlottesville's deputy city manager.
Importantly, the current residents at the property can stay on the current site for 3 years and will also have an opportunity to enter into affordable housing after it's been redeveloped if they so choose.
If Habitat and PHA's $7.2 million offer is accepted, the city will assume the project's debt service. Terms of the loan have not yet been finalized. And finally today, some children with chronic lung problems may be better treated with antiviral medicines rather than commonly prescribed steroids. New research at the University of Virginia School of Medicine finds that nearly a quarter of kids with recurrent wheezing had silent lung infections and may respond better to antiviral drugs rather than steroids that can carry lifelong side effects. The research comes from screening more than 800 children and teens with severe wheezing. The findings are published in the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Wednesday.